The congregation may be seated. Maybe you've seen the commercial for Halo's Mandarin Oranges. Accompanied by an eerie soundtrack, a young girl who could be Snow White is walking warily through a dark wood, clutching a bright little orange in her two hands. Abruptly, she is confronted by a haggard woman with shriveled features and a raspy voice who offers to trade snacks with the girl. The bent and crooked woman holds out a dark, misshapen apple with a rather significant rotten spot. Young girl hesitates and asks, "Is that a poison apple?" "No, it's a wish apple," the old woman croaks. And then the rotten spot on the apple is revealed as a face that quips, "Yeah, if your wish is to be full of poison." "Shut up," the woman hisses to the apple and then extends the poison fruit closer to the girl. "Want it?" she insists. And during this exchange, a tiny script disclaimer appears at the bottom of the screen. Apples are yummy unless they've been cursed. Warning, do not eat talking food. This Snow White heeds the warning and fares much better than the original Brothers Grimm version. In the final scene, the evil woman is arrested by the authorities while the girl enjoys a slice of her orange. And the voiceover dispels all creepiness with the bright declaration, "Good choice, kid. Wonderful halos, sweet, seedless, easy peel." Indeed, good choice. But of course, the whole point is that it wasn't actually much of a choice at all. Wonderful halo or poison apple? The right choice is pretty obvious. Some choices in life are that way. Sometimes the right choice is so obvious that marketing and advertising seem unnecessary. We don't need to be told what to choose. There's no doubt about it. It speaks for itself. Which is why, I suppose, something about our text from Deuteronomy this morning seems a bit odd. Moses is laying out a choice for the people of Israel. It is a significant moment in Israel's history. They are finally 40 long years of waiting and wandering, finally, on the verge of fulfilling the promise and entering into the promised land. It was close, and they knew it. So before they make the last push across the Jordan and into their new homeland, God directs Moses to review the covenant plan with Israel one more time. It's a rather thorough review, an entire book's worth. And now we get the summary appeal. A choice needs to be made. Will Israel hang on to the wonderful gifts of the covenant, or will they trade their blessings for the poison of a strange people? "See, I have set before you today life and good, death and evil." That's the choice. On the one hand, life and blessing. On the other, death and curse. It hardly seems like much of a choice. No struggle here. And yet the exhortation follows with an earnest appeal. "So choose life in order that you may live." Yeah, I think. No kidding. What's so difficult about this choice? Death, life, and curse versus life, good, and blessings. Which one to pick? Wonderful halo or poison apple? Life and blessing or death and curse? This is not a hard choice, is it? Odd, isn't it, how mightily Israel struggles with this choice? Moses seems to know that it's not exactly a slam dunk, and his misgivings are well-founded. The bizarre reality is that Israel had a very hard time choosing life. Somehow they actually managed, with great consistency and determination to reject the offer of life and choose death instead. Remarkable. Or maybe not so remarkable. Indeed, perhaps it's easy enough for us to understand the struggle Israel had with their choice. We also know something about the difficulty of choosing life and rejecting death. The problem, of course, is that so often the choice of death doesn't look like death. Death is marketed very well. It looks enticing. And the death that lurks in the choice is not immediately present. The choice between life and death isn't so obvious after all. It's a choice you face multiple times every day. And the moment of decision rarely comes packaged with the drama of the Halo's commercial or freighted with the significance of Deuteronomy. The choices are subtle and come in a parade of daily routine temptations. Little choices, small decisions, tiny determinations, a word, a glance, a silence, a sigh, a click, a capitulation, a choice. So easily are you distracted and attracted by the death all around you. So easily you drop the blessing of God and clutch the cursed apple. But it doesn't look cursed. It looks wonderful. It looks like a party full of laughter and pleasure. It looks like the enhancement of your strongest desires and the fulfillment of your loftiest dreams. It looks like sexual gratification. It looks like a remedy for loneliness and future security. It looks like an escape from shame and a bit more prestige. It looks like the affirmation of the real you and a chance to feel good about you being you. The apple looks delicious, and so you reject life and choose death, fooled by an apple full of poison. And it doesn't help either that the choice of life is equally disguised. In his wisdom, a wisdom that confounds our sensibilities, God hides life in the shape of a cross, in the shape of appalling suffering and agonizing death. The choice of life doesn't look like life. The choice of life is the cross. To choose life is to choose the cross. It makes no sense. No wonder Moses had to mount a rigorous rhetorical effort to campaign for the choice of life. And no wonder Jesus had to urge his disciples to take up the cross. It's not a choice anyone would make naturally. It's not a choice that sells itself. There's nothing obvious about it. Quite the opposite, actually. Who would choose the cross? To choose the cross is to choose death. It is. We all know it. A Roman cross was meant to kill. But even the metaphorical cross of the disciple of Christ accomplishes the same thing. It ceases to be a metaphor. Christ's cross kills you. It does. The cross is the death of self. It is the protracted, painstaking execution of you. Your carefully cultivated sense of personal identity and the meticulously maintained image you pamper and project are wiped out by the cross. The cross is a ruthless attack on your very being. It is death. And this is where the disciple's life must always begin, with the surrender of self, the forsaking of ego preservation, the renunciation of self-promotion. You die. God expects much from those who would choose his life. Jesus expects much. Small wonder, then, that we must be exhorted and reminded to choose life. It's not an easy or obvious choice. There's nothing pleasant about the cross. Given the stark reality of the cross, you begin to wonder just who would ever choose it? Indeed, who would choose it? Well, Jesus would. Jesus did. Knowing completely all that it entailed, comprehending the full horror and the awful price to be paid, Jesus chose the cross. He made his choice because, above all else, he was determined to do the Father's will. Jesus chose the cross because the Father had already chosen the salvation of his people. The people of Israel had been singled out by God. They were his chosen people. He wanted them. He claimed them. The admonition from Moses then was merely an appeal that the chosen people acknowledge God's choice and take what God had already decided and given. Only one choice matters. Only one choice can give life. Only God's choice. The people did not need to choose God. God had already chosen them. All that remained was to see whether they would recognize God's choice and receive the benefits of his giving, or foolishly and rebelliously reject God's choice and go their own way instead. Choosing life was nothing more than agreeing with God's choice already made. What a strange choice it was that God made. There was nothing obvious about this choice. And frankly, it did not look like a good choice. But good choice or bad choice, God chose. He chose Israel, and like it or not, and often they did not like it, they were his people. And again, God made his choice. And again, what an odd choice he made. But good choice or bad choice, he chose you. You are his own elect child. You. Like it or not, it is so. The only question left is what now you will do with his choice. Will you embrace it and take up your cross? Or will you defy him and spurn his choice, whether all at once or by slow degrees, and head off on the inviting and pleasant path that ends finally in death? What will you choose? That's the question. The only question that continues to confront every one of us. God has made his choice. What will you choose? Don't squander the gift. Don't fight him on this. Relent. Surrender. Die to yourself. Listen to Moses. Listen to Jesus. Choose the cross. Choose life. Amen. We stand for the hymn.